Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Let's get into Monday Night Rugby. We have Matt Williams and Eddie O'Sullivan with us. The weekend's results include Australia 18, Ireland 9. That crazy game at Ellis Park, South Africa 42 points to England's 39 after England led. New Zealand 52 to France's 11. We had Japan beating Italy 34 points to 17. And Wales did beat Argentina 23 points to 10. Matt Williams and Eddie O'Sullivan are on the line. So in the main, Matt, and home form notwithstanding, the Southern Hemisphere bites back.
Yeah, it's interesting, Joe. I always believe the November favours the North and June favours the South. End of long seasons for both sets. Some players rested, some not. You know, maybe we can draw that line with France. That, well, France were pretty poor in that second half. They did very well for the first 40 but couldn't cope. But I think it went pretty much to form. South Africa was just a great game. South Africa England was entertainment. You know, I don't know what we could draw rugby-wise out of it, but gee, it was great to watch. But the best game was definitely Ireland and Australia.
Yeah, so we'll get into the specifics of Ireland-Australia in just a moment. But if we take big picture for a second here, Eddie, like, you kind of have to give Joe Schmidt a free pass here, don't we? I mean, there's huge games in November, which culminates in New Zealand coming to town. Six Nations can't be sacrificed. He made the point himself that he basically has 11 test matches to work with here until World Cup territory. So, you know, this is kind of it. This is where you have to make investments in players so that you're not left with a similar situation to the last World Cup. So in those broad, bigger terms, as a previous Irish coach, I presume you can empathise, there are no games really where you want to lose, but this is probably the environment where you have to kind of say, OK, fair enough.
Yeah, I think there was no doubt before they left Ireland. It was obvious they were going to have to roll the dice in terms of getting people on the field who may not have started before. Obviously, Joey Carey was the big one. I just thought maybe that he might have put his best foot forward on the first test and try and win that, which was, I believe, winnable. And then, you know, you can roll the dice a bit in the second test as you're still in the series.
Which is more the approach he took in South Africa 2 years ago.
Yeah, I just thought it might have been, you know, his strategy of actually getting guys on the field is right. He's got to do that. He's got to find his depth. But I just thought maybe he might have done that next week, because if he could have got a result this week, and I believe he could have, you know, certainly would have kept them in the series. Now they're under pressure next week. If they lose next week, the series is over, you know. So, but that's just another way of doing it. But I do agree he had to roll the dice with certain positions. I just think, though, that I was surprised. The only selection that surprised me, actually, was the selection at open side that Levy wasn't starting, because that was a huge problem for us when we were faced down with Hooper and Pocock.
I think he has a bit of a hip issue, is the word on Levy. And certainly, well, I mean, the Leinster lads have all been rested, really.
Either he's in or he's out. As far as I know, nobody said he was out.
Yeah.
The hip issue comes up today that he wasn't playing. But, like, you either declare a guy fit or not fit. If they said last week, Dan Levy is not fit, he won't be starting, that explains everything. This week, well, he had a bit of a hip, and we didn't start him. I don't know how that works.
Yeah,
you gotta.
They're never really in the habit, though. They're never really in the habit of letting the opposition know anything too early. In fairness, like, that'd be a trend.
You pick your team. It doesn't matter if he's not playing. If he's not playing, it doesn't matter what he's got. He might have a sore nose. It doesn't matter. It's no logic to say, "Oh, this week he had a bit of a hip. He wasn't starting. We got beaten up in the back row because they had two open sides. We'd none." It was a big factor in the game. Yeah. But now this week, well, he's got a hip. Well, I don't know. I don't get that. There's no logic to me in doing that. Like, we're not dealing with school kids here. We'll just get the information out, let people make up their own mind. I don't buy into that nonsense.
Is there not a logic in keeping the Australians guessing for as long as possible now?
Guessing what? Sure, he named the team 48 hours out. There's no guessing who's on the team.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter whether it's a hip or whether he's dropped. They're just explaining it this week. But, like, there's no point saying last Monday he had a hit.
Maybe I'm wrong here. No,
go on. I'm probably just not following your point. I'm probably just misunderstanding your point.
My point is that as far as I know, Levy was fit.
Okay.
And why didn't they say last week that he wasn't fit and he wouldn't be available? As far as I know, it's only now we find out he's not fit. So I don't understand the logic in that.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like giving you the information afterwards. I don't see the logic in that. And just if Levy wasn't fit, he should have said he wasn't fit instead of pretending he's fit, not picking him. And no, he's not fit this week. So I just, it's confusing for me why you would do that.
Yeah.
So we can't discuss the background all because, well, Dan wasn't fit. Well, all right. Yeah. What's the point?
They've never been overly forthcoming with injury news, that's for sure. Well, the word is, I think he's fit to come back in. Like, we're expecting him. Sexton's expected to come back in. Levy is expected, and Ringrose as well. That's the word. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Matt, I don't know if you have any other information. It seemed to me that most of the Leinster lads were left out of the first test, and then the word was, I only heard it today as well, admittedly, that Levy was carrying a bit of a hip knock from obviously the end of the season, and they reckon the extra week would do him good. That was basically the story as I understood it.
I'm with Eddie that I thought they would have picked their best side first, win the first series, then rest the boys if they had to.
Mm.
But again, as Eddie said, you know, we're mixing and matching here. Look, we have to keep in mind, and Eddie would remember this better than me, in the World Cup in New Zealand, when New Zealand won the World Cup, Dan Carter was injured, Aaron Cruden was injured.
Mm.
And they had to go to their third out half, who was away fishing, to kick the winning goal in the final. You've got to take this time to blood guys and give them depth. It's never easy in the modern era where we don't have midweek games.
Mm.
And interestingly, the best team in the world, New Zealand, when they come north in November, they do have midweek games. They played French Barbarians in a game. You've got to give these guys time. And Joey Carberry has to be allowed to have some form of failure. Now, I don't believe Joey failed. I thought he played okay.
Mm.
But my meaning is he's not going to play at his best. It takes 10 games or so at international level to feel comfortable. And you just got to give these guys time. And that's why you have the November series and the June series where there's not, you know, the sheep station's not on winning or losing. You got to do this. You've got to have time. Australia rested Israel Folau last November and they sent Pocock away for 12 months. Now, that's a much, much stronger Australian side than was put out in November last year. I'm not making any excuses. I'm just saying it as I see it.
Yeah.
And I would back Joe 100% to rest guys. And I don't agree with where he did it, but I'm not the coach. That's his area. But I agree with Eddie. Like, we're resting the Leinster guys because they're injured. Just tell us if he's sick. If he's got a bang, he's a footballer. He's got a bang and he's out. That's great. Because then we know. Because Pocock and Hooper pose a threat that's just so different to every other back row in international rugby at the moment. And it's a really good, when they're together, they're a powerful force.
Mm.
And Pocock's not back to his best yet. He's the Brumbies. He played very well on Saturday, but he's still not as good as he can get. He is truly a world-class player.
Yeah.
As is Israel Folau. And, you know, you could see when you put two really top line players back in a good side, and Australia's always going to put out a good side, it makes a difference. And Ireland had rested, they're really top line players.
Mm.
So what will happen next Saturday, you know, we don't know. But I think Eddie's point and my point is a valid point. It doesn't mean we're right.
But yeah, sure. But it does put a certain pressure on Ireland to win the series. Now, we'll talk about some specifics of the game. Here was Joe Schmidt's general assessment of where it was won and lost.
I thought they were incredibly physical. I thought they persisted with a pretty effective tactic of cross-kicking and having Israel Folau going after them. You know, he didn't get them all, but he got a few that allowed them to get in behind us, and then we were scrambling a little bit. We slipped off a few tackles, one early on Curtly Beal, where I thought Jacob Stockdale made an unbelievable tackle in the corner on Corabetti. They probably got a bit of, they worked pretty hard at the scrum and got it to turn pretty well. I felt our line out, got some really good pressure on them. That was probably a positive for us. You know, and even we got behind them a few times and overkicked probably the ball a couple of times. Once from Connor when it went touch and goal, and another one from Jacob Stockdale that came off the side of his foot and went straight into touch. I think we just probably didn't quite hold on to the ball as well as we would have liked. There was a lot of pressure at the ruck as well. You know, that's the level. and we've got to be able to compete at that level and get the margins to fall our way, albeit they were pretty skinny today. With 14 minutes left, I think we led 9-8. But you got to lead after 80 minutes.
So that's Joe Schmidt sounding suitably glum. What's it for you, Eddie? Give us your where was it won and lost.
I think the upside was our lineup was excellent, and their lineup was a bit of a horror show. They last three, and we spoiled another three or four, which was just as well, because Australia looked really dangerous when they got quality ball in the set piece. Our defence seemed at sea in the first half, and I think it was all down to the fact that for some reason Andy Farrell decided to send Robbie Henshaw the line on an aggressive up and in, and it cost us a try, and almost cost us a try earlier, except for Stockdale's try-saving tackle, which by the way is his job. I wouldn't get too carried away, but that's his job as a blindside winger to come across and do that. But like, our defence was all over the place in that first half. We did less of it in the second half at all, because it was not working for us. Whereas on that, the flip side, Australia's up and in was excellent. They caught Conor Murray behind the game line. They caught Joey Carberry. They really hit him man and ball. So, like, our defence looked ropey. Our lineup was good. Our scrum was under pressure, which is understandable given we started our second string front row. But the worrying thing for me was when we conceded that key penalty in our own posts, it was our first string front row around the field. So I think, you know, Australia smell some blood there, like, because that front row was fresh off the bench and it got beaten up at that scrum, and it cost us 3 points. I thought our kicking game was poor. I mean, why were we kicking the ball to Israel Folau? I mean, the giveaway is Australia are kicking it to him, so why would we do that? You know, it was a really bad strategy. We lost the kicking game, and our defence got shut down. You know, our spot runners out the back got hit in the backfield, and in fairness to Australia, they brought a lot more physicality than anyone expected. And we had to work really hard for every yard we went to try to go through them, and it didn't really work. So, you know, we had a couple of chances that we didn't take, but, you know, Australia blew a couple as well. So at the end of the day, there was no argument the better team won. It was 2-0, which is probably a fair reflection. If everything stuck for Ireland, we'd have scored, but if everything stuck for Australia, they got another couple as well. So I think we can't complain. We're behind the eight ball a bit, but I think all those things are fixable. Scrum is fixable. You know, our defence is fixable. We've got to fix the ruck. We've got to look at our kicking game. There's a checklist there, and we don't have to fix them all. We could still probably win the game by fixing two or three of them, because it is still a tight game. But there are work-ons for sure this week, and we have to see how they go about fixing it.
And on the up-and-in Irish defence, and you mentioned Henshaw shooting up, do you have a problem with the up and in defence in theory, or is it that once Ringrose comes in, that'll be just instantly much better?
No, I don't think it'll be any better, because, like, I think that it's an all or nothing defence. If Robbie gets a man in ball, then it works, and if he doesn't, but you're dealing with a guy who's like an exceptionally good footballer who's caused all the problems. That was Courtney Beale. Courtney Beale is very dangerous player, and he's got great hands, so if you don't get a man on ball, he gets a pass away, or he steps you in a phone booth and he's gone. So it's a very high risk strategy, and I think Ireland's problem with their defence goes back to the fact that we've been conceding 3 tries in a lot of our games this year. If you go back to the autumn, we had 3 tries against Argentina, then in the spring we had 3 tries against Italy, 3 tries against Wales, 3 tries against England. It could have been 3 last Saturday. Like, that's not a good number for us, 3 tries. It's hard to win a game when you can see 3 tries. But that up and in is a kind of a reaction to the fact that we're very narrow. And if you go up and in, you can use a narrow defence if it works. But if it doesn't work, you're going to get skinned on the outside. So we're still very narrow. And I think Andy Farrell thought the up and in might solve it. And the answer to that, then Australia, whatever about any other game, it doesn't work. So he's got to rethink that for next week. Or if that's based on the outside next week, I guarantee Australia are going to be even better at exploiting it.
Okay, because they'll see it coming. As Eddie mentions there, Matt, we've conceded plenty of tries, and we've talked about the defence a lot, and it was a theme in the Six Nations. I suppose the reason Ireland won the Six Nations is they scored a record number of tries, and generally when they arrived or pitched up in opposition 22, they came away with points of some description, which didn't happen on Saturday morning. So what were you seeing there?
Completely concur with what Eddie just said. And, you know, just to finish that off, Ireland are vulnerable in the last metre of the field, and they have been for some time. And Kirtley Beale is a second 5'8", so he's doing, he's playing that, getting that ball wide. But on Ireland's attack, they, when we saw them play England in the Grand Slam, they were highly motivated, and they went out to win that game. They didn't go there and say we're going to try not to lose. They said we're going to win, and they were magnificent. They were, you know, absolutely magnificent in their attacking structure and their themes and how they went about it. And, you know, sometimes just how can a player not be motivated at international level? They obviously are. But that burning hunger, that real driving, gnawing pain inside an athlete, sometimes when you get great success, it just drops a fraction. Mm. And it's at the end of the year. And the Wallabies were up. There's a lot of anger in Australian rugby at the moment with the players because Australian rugby is in so much trouble. And they get panned a lot. They're not getting the respect they deserve. And I really felt I've been at the World Under 20s Championship, and I've bumped into Alan Gaffney a number of times, and Anthony Hill, who's the business manager for the Wallabies, Chris Whittaker is going back to help with the Waratahs, and we're all talking about it, that this team went out against New Zealand in the last game last year and beat New Zealand. They should have won the series, and they still didn't get respect. And I really think that this group of men are really highly motivated. And I thought that was a difference. It was a 5-metre scrum Ireland put in, and seven phases later, Ireland still had the possession, but they'd gone back over the 22.
Yes.
Australia were just up and aggressive, and Ireland didn't have a lot of answers offensively. They reminded me of the way they played against Wales, where they thought, well, we'll just take it route one, pass off the nine, and we'll bash them up. And when they didn't bash Australia up there, there weren't a lot of answers. And part of that is because Robbie Henshaw's playing 13. He's a great player, but he's a great 12. We had two very good 12s on the field. Mm. I think Ringrose coming back in at 13 will give us some more options. But and obviously Joey Carberry under pressure. There was a number of reasons for that performance. But if Ireland can't get a little more creative, and I believe they can with Sexton and Ringrose in, and they keep going route one, they'll lose in Melbourne. Mm. They've got to score some tries. Mm. As simple as that. I mean, it's, you know, as Shane Horgan once said to me, I said it to him, you've got to score tries. He said, really, it's been going a fair while, Matt. You know, but they do have to score those tries. Mm. And the last thing that I concur with him, to beat Joe Schmidt, a team that Joe Schmidt coaches, you've got to beat them in the kicking game. Every game they lose in the kicking game. And that's from talking from guys that have been around him at Leinster and the national side. And it was a real insight for me when they brought that up. Now, Michael Checker spent a lot of time in the Six Nations watching Ireland play. And he was talking to a lot of old players, he was doing the Irish work there where he'd done so much work before. And I thought he got his kicking game and his kicking strategy absolutely spot on. They put huge pressure on Connor Murray back where he catches those box kicks and Robbie Carnley. And we saw Robbie Carnley make an error that he never makes.
Mm.
So I think we've got to give the Australians a fair bit of credit, guys, Joe and the Irish team. Australia got it, except their line-out, which was very poor.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned maybe just Ireland being just two or three notches off what we saw at Twickenham, and that Rob Kearney mistake, because he was asked about it. This is when he didn't quite get under that Will Genia box kick. And he said it was just concentration. I was going through 6 or 7 minutes where the intensity was off the charts, and fatigue makes cowards of us all sometimes. And that was just a moment when concentration slipped on the back of a bit of fatigue. I guess they've travelled. It's the end of a long season as well. Maybe that's a factor. Maybe they're still adjusting jet lag and everything else. What about Joey Carberry then, Eddie? You said he did fine. Schmidt said, I thought he was pretty solid. He came off the field at 9-8. That's not a bad return for a young man who's just starting his first big tier one test match, put a lot of preparation in during the week. So, I mean, still only 22 years old. Michael Checa said he went up to him afterwards to tell him that he's a big fan of his works. And he said, Carberry's a star. I've been watching him. I went up to him after the game. I've never met him before. I said, I love your work because that guy can play footy. He's an outstanding player. So you might talk to us a bit more about Carberry, Eddie.
Yeah, I think he was excellent. Really, thought he did a great job. A lot of pressure on him going into that game. Let's be honest, like, he knows himself that this is his chance to step up, start a test game against a Tier 1 nation. The only blot in his copybook was the penalty he missed, 40 out in the middle. Should have been a regular shot from
him.
He let that slip by. But outside of that, I thought he ran the game well. He played flat to the line. His kicking game was good. He defended well. He made a lot of tackles because I think Australia went after him, as you'd expect him to, see what he's made of. So I thought he ticked all the boxes. I thought it was a really good debut. I probably could have stayed on longer. I don't know why you texting came on. I don't know what the plan was, so I'm sure George Smith had a plan for that. But I thought Carberry could have played on unless he picked up in a knock or something. So I thought, yeah, this guy has proven again he's on the right track. But just on one point, Joe, that you just in the intro there is about the end of long season and guys' tiredness, not buying it. Like, or we have the best player management system in the world in Ireland. These guys are treated like, you know, they're treated like royalty in terms of getting ready. And they should. There's nothing wrong with it. Like, we're doing what a lot of other unions would love to do, and they can't do it. So we're pitching up at the end of the season. Guys have been managed right through the season. They've played. And with the GPS, we know how many meters they've run since last August, and we know how many tackles they've made. So the fatigue thing doesn't wash. And, you know, and neither does the jet lag. You know, this is not about us trying to finish out the season, like, because we're coming to the end of the long one. We've been through a long season, but guys have been managed superbly, and that's a great thing. It should continue, but it's not a reason for us to say we're tired and not buying at this stage. We have the best management system in the world.
So Matt, you both mentioned Pocock and Hooper and the effect they had in the game. So what happens to them next Saturday at 11 o'clock? What's the plan?
Because they're very good. They're a very good duo. They work well together on the field. And sometimes,
oh, you're just breaking up. We'll come back to you. We'll get that line back, Matt, and we'll come back to you in 1 second. Eddie, same question to you. Pocock and Hooper with presumably Dan Levy back in the side.
Yeah, I think Levy has to go in there, you know, because at least with an out and out open side who can play ball, you're still under a lot of pressure because it is, as Matt said, it's a different style of back row, and not many teams play two open sides effectively across their back row. So the key there is that your ball presentation, your clean outs, and George Smith mentioned something about our support plus being taken out. I don't know, I didn't see that. I just thought that at times we were slow to react in the tackle scenario. And the other thing was as well that we were losing a lot of collisions we expect to win normally. And that means that, you know, once you lose the collision, the poacher gets a better body position over the ball. If you lose the collision, he's got to go back through the gate and it's much harder for him to get in there. So the fact that Australia were winning their fair quota of collisions, and then you had two open sides who were like absolutely like groundhogs in on the ball, and we didn't have an open side. And if you're a half yard off there, it's all over. And in fact, I thought our final penalty was a very harsh call against Pocock. He hit a counter ruck, bounced out, went straight on the ball, and he got called for off his feet. If you look at the video, he was perfectly positioned. So, like, it's a problem area. But I think we lost something in the region of 8 rucks. And all those might not have been poachers. You could have had a knock on or a fumble. But the way to do it is we've got to brain surgeons around the breakdown next weekend, you know, in terms of getting guys there very early and making sure we win some collisions and just winning that space in front of the ball. Because they will do a number on us again next week if we don't do that. And it's all fixable. It's just an awareness thing. It's probably guys being more aware of whether somebody's going to go to the line with the ball. And it's just bread and butter stuff. But with a team like this, like Australia with two back rows of that calibre, you don't get second chances. You lose the ball because it's one part of your game that's got to be on its pristine. And Ireland dropped down to like 93% at ruck time. During the Six Nations, we were 98-99% in all our games. But I think Levy changes that a little bit, but it doesn't solve it completely. But I think Levy has to go in, and he should have been in last week if he was able to play, but seemingly now, the word is he might have been. But anyway,
reopen that now, do you? Matt, we've kind of dealt with Pocock and Hooper there. Feel free to touch them if you want. And then I was going to ask here, presumably, so Ringrose is back in, Sexton, we've mentioned, Dan Levy's back in, the Irish front row, there's changes there. So you swirl all that together, and are you going as far as confident of Ireland making this series 1-1 next weekend?
No, I'm not. I think it's a fascinating series. I'm not, because what everyone forgets is the Sunday before, the Brumbies were playing. So Pocock and the rest of the Brumbie contingent were playing Sunday afternoon, and they didn't get up to Brisbane till Monday morning. They were rested Monday. So the Wallabies only had a 4-day preparation. And people forget that. And that was my point that Eddie was making as well, that the first test, I thought they were very, very vulnerable. And that's what shocked me about the selection, for the Irish selection when they rested the players. Ireland will be a much better side for obviously a week there, getting settled, bringing back in their better players. But so will that Australian side. They will be a much better side. They blooded, there were four new caps in there, had a very young hooker. Who was nervous. You could see the poor kid in the national anthem. It was great to watch. It was, he's not a great singer, but he was giving it his best. He was pumping out every note flat. Unfortunately, everyone in the world heard it, but the kid was motivated. Now, he'll be a much, I'm expecting he'll be selected again. Mm. He'll be a much better, as an individual for that one game. The Melbourne ground is a beautiful ground to play rugby at. And I'm expecting a great game, but I think it's going to be really close. And if Wallabies can do what they did before, which is get up in Ireland's face, and there hasn't been anyone really do that. Mm. And as he said, Ireland have won every collision for maybe 10 or 11 tests, and they didn't expect that from that Australian side. Mm. Now, if they come out and can get that going again, it'll be very interesting to see how Ireland respond. Now, also, if what they're not used to is having a genuine second 5-8, as we call it down here. Kirtley Beall playing at 12 gives width on the ball. And what does he do? He has Kieran running a decoy line, and he's hitting this giant man, Israel Folau, out back. And as Eddie was 13 coming up, Kirtley Beall ruled out a part. If they even...
Yeah, unfortunately, the line's just going, Matt. We'll have to leave it there. We'll catch up with you later on in the week. Eddie, unfortunately, Matt's line has gone there. I think he was edging towards this is going to be very, very difficult for Ireland to the point of going for Australia. What's your read on next weekend then?
Yeah, I think the point he makes as well is a really good point about the fact that the Wallabies had very little prep time and they came off of games, some of them on Sunday, so they would have really spent this week trying to piece things together. And maybe that's where the line-out showed up, that they were under so much pressure. And there's a chance here maybe Joe Schmidt doubles down on that by putting Devin Toner in, and that puts even more pressure on the Australian line-out. It's an option for them because it did shut them down to a great extent, the fact that the quality of the line-up was very poor. But I think they will improve. But I think all ours are fixable. So I think our scrum will be better. I think we got caught maybe on Saturday. We didn't expect it. We got caught. I think our line-out will be solid. I just think the problems they've got to figure out is defensively. They've got to figure out a way of shutting Australia down without sending somebody over the line against Kirtley Beall.
Even if it's Ringrose who might have a better read or be less likely to shoot up, you think that's just too risky with Beall there?
It is too risky, I think, with Beall there. It's an all or nothing with Beall, and he's a very slippery character in the best sense of the word as a footballer. And he's got great hands. I mean, he gets that ball away in lightning time, and he's a really good footballer. But that's an area of concern, how we defend. Secondary concern is we couldn't break them down. We just, the physicality of their guys and the way they played up and in at the right time, we just got very few dividends for all our carries. And our kicking game, our trade fighting for us to contestables. I wouldn't be planning on kicking the ball down Kirtley Beale's throat again, or not Kirtley Beale, but Israel Folau's throat again. Maybe we should look to go after Corey Betty on the wing or something. Like, we don't know what he's like under the high ball that much, but the kicking strategy has to change. Maybe we've got to find more grass rather than going, on the contestables. But there are three key areas. But look, you don't have to fix all of them. If we fix a few of them, it's still going to be a tight test game. But the problem is now we've no wriggle room in terms of winning the series. Like, we went out with the view we could win the series, and rightly so. They're champions in Europe. We had on a great run of games, and now because the first test is gone, it's very hard to win a test series after losing the first test. That's just the history of test rugby, when you're in the Southern Hemisphere. So if we can win on Saturday, it's back on. But I do think Australia will improve as well. I'm not sure about that. So it's doable, but it ain't going to be easy.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. Thanks so much for this evening. Eddie O'Sullivan there on the line, and Matt Williams as well, back in a second.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.